Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world.
Hello.
It's the Ron Kelly Show.
Hey, yeah.
The news you want.
Is the perception still that a black man with a gun is a criminal?
With the topics you need.
Marching might have been good for back in the day, but what kind of effectiveness is marching have on society today?
Ron Kelly.
Black males 18 to 24 years old have the highest homicide offending rate.
4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 1 p.m. Pacific. It's the Ron Kelly Show.
So don't get it twisted. Get it twisted.
On blogtalkradio.com.
That's exactly right, everyone. Do not get it twisted. Good Friday afternoon to you all. Welcome. It's the Ron Kelly Show. And you know what time it is. Actually, the show is starting at 5 p.m. now. So thank you all for moving it along with me. So we're doing the show from now on for 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining me this afternoon. It's an absolute pleasure to have you all here, and welcome to the headquarters of Common Sense. It's the headquarters of Common Sense, ladies and gentlemen. This is the place where common sense rules. Because, you know, we can go to college, and there's nothing wrong with that, and, you know, we can get education, which, you know, a lot of us need to pursue our chosen fields of employment or career choices, rather. But common sense is the one thing that we all need. See, because God knew that everybody, that there would be some people who were smarter than others. Some would go to college and some wouldn't. So the common denominator, ladies and gentlemen, was common sense. See, common sense everybody has. Well, okay, everybody has, but not everyone uses. But everyone has common sense, or at least they should. Welcome everybody to the university, the Kelly University of Common Sense, is the Ron Kelly Show. And I have a special treat for you, everyone, this afternoon. We have our resident clinical psychologist, Dr. Susanna Flores, who is the author of Face Hooked. And she's here this afternoon. Hello, Dr. Susanna. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Ron. How are you?
Doing well, thanks. How's everything going?
Everything's going well.
All right. Where can we get the book now? Let's spill the beans. Where can we get the book?
It should be out in hard copy and ebook format by the end of May. So we're all really excited about it. Can't wait.
Yeah, I'm really excited too, because I have a few choice friends I want to send a copy to, who are obviously face hooked. And so congratulations once again, and we're all very very excited for you. And very excited for you. Looking forward to reading Face Hooked. Then you come back and we'll talk about it, because, you know, there's so many people who need guidance, for the lack of a better word, Dr. Susanna. So we look forward to the first run of the book.
Thank you. How to become
un-Facebooked,
right?
Yeah, well, hope springs eternal. I think one of the biggest things, Dr. Susanna, you can correct me on this if I'm wrong, but I think one of the first things you have to do if you find yourself caught up in a situation is to admit it, Dr. Susanna. Is that one of the is that the hardest thing for a person to do who has succumbed to the lure of some type of addiction?
Insight is always the first step, Ron. You're absolutely right. You have to be able to admit that you've lost control.
Hi, everybody. We're talking to Dr. Susanna Flores, our resident clinical psychologist and author of Face Hooked. And we're talking this afternoon about addictive behaviors. And, you know, and Dr. Susanna, I think one of the biggest, I don't want to say biggest, but one of the misnomers, I guess, for lack of a better word, is that when you mention the word addicted, most people associate it to drugs. Isn't that right?
That is correct.
And there's so many other things to to find yourself caught up in. Now, what we're going to do this afternoon, everybody, is we're not necessarily focusing so much on the addiction, Dr. Susanna, but what I want to talk about initially, anyway, at least, is there a common denominator for folks who find themselves caught up in a situation? Because, for example, you have people who are weekend warriors. Let's talk about drugs for a second. Now, you know, there are people who can sniff as much as they want over the weekend and return to normal and go back to work like nothing ever happened, be responsible, pay their bills, no chaos going on in their lives. And then there are other people who completely fall apart and destroy themselves when they get. So what's the difference between the person who falls apart and the one who doesn't? What's one of some of the differences?
Some of the differences are the degree to which their use is affecting their life, right? So if a person is becoming obsessed or they're constantly thinking about using, and to the point that they begin to neglect, like, their family, their work, their school, their friends begin to change. Basically, drug use or anything related to that becomes primary. You know, it's kind of like, you know, if you think of it this way, like if you're being deprived of oxygen, the only thing that is important to you at that time is getting in another breath, right? And it's very similar. It's like, you know, it is seeking out behavior, you know, how to engage in it, how to get it, when the next fix is going to be, compulsive behavior, trying to avoid withdrawals. That's when you know that it's overtaking your life.
Again, are there some weaknesses between, let's say, the weekend warrior and the strung out crackhead? Are there some basic weaknesses that are distinguishable between the two?
Yeah. Basically, you know, there's some risk factors to make you completely dependent. Right, there's a difference. Like, you know, there's people that abuse substances. You know, you just take probably too much. You know, we've all been there, right? You had a crazy weekend or something, a little bit too much than you probably should have, right? Or dependence, where, again, it's affecting your life in different ways. So, like, you know, just to name a few, some of the risk factors are genetics. You know, like, so, for example, individuals who are alcoholics are, like, 6 times more likely than non-alcoholics to have a family member who have been dependent. Men are twice as likely to have problems than women. People who have a mental illness, people who are surrounded by peer pressure to use, family dysfunctionality, you know, like people are using it as a coping mechanism to deal with their family craziness. Loneliness is another one. We'll probably get more specific on the nature of the substance. So, for example, like crack, heroin, and cocaine have the highest levels of addiction, you know, or bring about addiction faster than other substances. When you first started using, the age is really, really important, and, you know, stress and how your body metabolizes it. You know, some people, need more of a dose or a high, you know, and that, of course, leads to more of a risk of becoming fully addicted or dependent, excuse me.
But we know that economic situations and mm-hmm. Those type of things do play a role in
addictions. Yes, absolutely.
We know they do play a role. But you can have like 2 kids from the same neighborhood. One winds up in prison. One winds up in Princeton. You know, under the same circumstances, and I'm like, well, you know, it's always puzzled me as to what differences. I mean, you know, we could always say upbringing and how they were taught, but you got 2 kids who were on the same block, for example, and they go in completely different directions. One gets addicted to the gang lifestyle, for example, and the other one does it. And I'm curious as to if there is some kind of guidelines where you could distinguish, you know, what happens with one person as opposed to the other one coming from the exact same economic and the same peer pressure, and what makes one kid successful and the other one, one succumbs and one doesn't under the same circumstances.
You know, that's honestly, that's like the million-dollar question, Ron, because, you know, you could have parents that do everything, quote-unquote, right. Right? You know, they're strict, they have curfews, you know, their kids have chores to do, they have family meetings, you know, they've been warned about drugs, they have, you know, everything like that, and then still they can succumb to that. You know, for teenagers or adolescents, one of the biggest risk factors is, of course, your friends. You know, during that time of your life, your peers, you know, no matter what your parents taught you, it's who you hang out with that will have a greater influence on what you do. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, like something like, you know, what are the specifics? It's like, it really depends on the individual and how hooked they can get on something. There are some individuals that can just, you know, take a hit of cocaine, right, and they try it once and they're fine. There are other people that one hit will lead to the destruction, you know, of the self, you know, for a lifetime, you know. And it is really, you know, kind of like at some level it's also the coin. Like, you know, you don't know what effect it's going to have on you. But at least we do know that, you know, certain factors are like, you know, again, family dysfunction. Like, you know, if your family's, you know, happy home or whatever, you know, then, you know, there's strictness or something, there's a less risk, but also genetics. You know, if it is in your family, overall, you know, you're going to be at risk for it more than other people will. It's important to know that, too. You know, like, if there is, you know, alcoholism in your family, probably be a good idea to try to avoid it, you know, as much as possible, because you are naturally more at risk because of genetics.
Okay, let's talk about that, Dr. Suzanne. Our clinic, our resident clinical psychologist, Dr. Susanna Flores, is here with us this afternoon, and we're talking about addictive behaviors, and not necessarily about the substance or the addiction, but what makes people vulnerable to addiction, or what constitutes addictive behavior, Dr. Susanna. So let's go back to the individual who hasn't succumbed to an addiction yet. Now, what are the common denominators, if any, that that makes a person more susceptible to or makes them have an addictive behavior, which could be anything: sex, drugs, gambling, church, you know, religion. It could be anything. So what are some of the telltale signs that would lead you to believe that one person is more susceptible to an addiction than someone who's not?
The first thing that comes to my head is loneliness, right? I mean, if you have a very strong support network, and by strong, I mean, you know, we can all have family members, right? But there's, you know, supportive family members, and then there are not so supportive family members. And, you know, you can be surrounded by people that still feel lonely. And there's a difference between being alone and lonely. If you feel like you need to engage in a behavior or a substance because it is triggering those reward centers of the brain, right, those dopamine centers. Now, that could be food. That could be shopping. That could be, you know, drugs, of course. It could be any repeated behavior that just gives you that sort of natural high. Then part of the addictive quality is that, you know, you are trying to fill a void in your life. Does that make sense?
Yes,
so like,
yes,
you
know, absolutely.
You'll use it more and more, right? Because, you know, like chocolate. I really love chocolate, and, you know, like I'm lacking happiness in my life in some other way, so I'm just going to keep eating chocolate, right? So you're triggering these reward centers of the brain, and, you know, the more you actually repeat the behavior, the more the dopamine levels of the brain, and I'll get into that, you know, get reinforced. So it causes you to continuously repeat it, right? And the more you use it, the less effect of a high you get. So you feel like you need more and more and more. You don't have another outlet. So, and this is when it overtakes your life.
Well, what I'm getting from this, Dr. Susanna, is that there's no built-in, you know, there's nothing in a person's DNA or in their makeup that would cause them to be more vulnerable to addictions. So what you're saying is, let's say like the fat kid that people pick on, or, you know, or somebody like that, or someone who has no friends, or, you know, the person who never gets picked for the basketball game. I mean, the people, it's outside influences, in other words, negative outside influences that causes the person to be more susceptible.
That's definitely a huge influence, right? But there is still a genetic, there is a DNA, there is, you know, like you're more susceptible, right? But if you are aware of it, right, and you're growing up in a healthy environment, then yes, your overall risk for super dependence goes down. Right. But yeah, definitely. It's like, you know, the kind of support that you were given, the environment, the mentors, you know, all of these things, especially, you know, for teenagers, you know, makes a huge difference. Like, given enough of a support network, good environment, good family, you know, if someone is offering you drugs, like, you know, and you've been educated enough about it, like, don't do it. You have your whole career ahead of you or whatever. Chances are you may avoid it. Right. And again, that's just, you know, one of the factors, but your environment definitely plays a huge part in your decision making.
Okay, so there is a trigger in the brain, or there is something about a person's DNA makeup that would let's talk about that now. What is it about what would if you can explain in layman's terms where my head don't spin off about let's talk about the DNA angle for lack of a better word. Explain that to me about how that works.
Ultimately, you have a higher tolerance for any substance if it already is in your family. So if I have family members who have a history of alcoholism, it would take a lot more alcohol for me to get drunk than it would other people. So I would feel the need to push it more on me in order to feel the same effect.
Okay, prior. Okay, so someone in your, it has to be in your family tree. In other words, where someone
family tree,
right?
Exactly. Biological.
Right. So if Pops was on the corner shooting dice all day, there's a chance that now that here in New Jersey anyway. Now that we have internet gambling now. So if your mother or your father were gamblers, you're more likely to be one than the average person whose parents weren't gamblers, in other words.
Well, yeah, gambling's slightly different because it's not chemical, right? But if you are growing up with smokers, the chances of you being a smoker are you know, quadrupled. Because, you know, it is a part of your natural life. You see it as normal. And if you grow up in a family who doesn't smoke, you know, or who consistently says, like, that's disgusting, we don't do that, or whatever, chances are you're going to avoid it because that's what you've learned. You've learned that this is a disgusting thing that you don't want to do. Again, it's not guaranteed.
Okay.
Like, you know, there's always exceptions to the rule. So part of it is genetic when it comes to a chemical addiction, right? Other parts, you know, and you know, some other addictions as well, right? But other parts are what we learn and what we observe every day.
So, in other words, Dr. Zan, what I'm getting from you is that in order for it to get passed down a family tree, it has to be something something chemical, like alcoholism, drug abuse, prescription painkillers, or whatever the case may be.
That's the highest level of risk, but there's been some studies that show that, you know, addiction to shopping, you know, or addiction to something else, that, again, it's more about these reward centers of the brain that have been programmed, right, to seek more and more reward. So, you know, there are some studies that reinforce that, too. So let's say my mother was a compulsive shopper, right? There's a component that I have observed her doing this, and I see this as normal. And then there's another component that says that, you know, I have been genetically predisposed, I guess is the phrase, right, to seek out a dopamine high more than other people.
Okay, so I've even done it myself, like went out and bought something, you know, admittedly. I've done it myself, went out and bought something. And I felt a little, you know, I felt a little bit better. I mean, it didn't necessarily mean that I was feeling bad, but, you know, I have done that. I mean, I don't think that would make me an addictive shopper, but I do understand that the concept of, like, buying a watch or a pair of shoes or a car or something like that, and how it does make you feel better, but it's temporary, though.
Well, it's temporary if you have other outlets in your life, right? But, you know, if you grow up in a miserable existence, right, and you have an escape, you're going to be seeking out this escape more often, you know, than other people would. Because the phrase that we use in our field is like, you know, you are medicating yourself, right? So a lot of people are really, shall we say, like depressed, right, or anxious. And they're using drugs and alcohol as a way to cope with their life circumstances. Not so much, you know, even that, you know, they are just like, okay, I need to do drugs, I need to do drugs. They're actually chemically like, okay, I feel better when I do this. I feel better when I, you know, do that. And it's like a circle of destruction, because the more you do it, you feel better. But the more you do it, you're also destroying yourself, right? So it's kind of like hard to find an escape out of it when this is your world.
Okay, so if somebody goes from, let's say you get drafted by the NFL and you go from living in a project to being a millionaire and you buy a whole bunch of stuff, or somebody who's on MTV Cribs showing them, you know, everything they own and all of that. I mean, so would that be like a high?
That's a super high, for sure.
Yeah, because you got TV cameras inside your house and you're showing them your theater in the basement, and so that would be another form of I don't know about it. I would say
sure,
addiction,
because
but
it makes you feel better. That's the whole point, right? Like, so if you're not happy within yourself, and you have something, and you know, let's use your example, right? All of a sudden, I'm a super millionaire, and I, you know, want to buy all this stuff, and I keep buying and buying and buying and buying because it represents a new me, right? So it makes me feel better. That gives me a temporary release from my environment. Now, if you come from, you know, a stable background, and, you know, definitely money helps. You know, people keep saying, like, money doesn't buy happiness. I would say, yeah, definitely it can help, right? But it's like, you know, if you are structured and you're stable and you're like, okay, you would have the mindset of, this is great, and but I still need to be careful, right? I need to balance myself. So I'm going to hang out with the people that will center me so that I don't let this go to my head, or I won't get out of control. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, especially for celebrities or whatever, that's what happens, is that they just spin out of it. You know, it's like more, 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 and this is a whole new life, right? The same thing. It's like, you know, it could be crack cocaine. It could be heroin. It could be methamphetamine. It's like all of a sudden you get this thing that just makes you feel better, and it is an escape.
Yeah, because I tell you, I definitely identify Dr. Susanna, because I bought a little sports car last year, 2-seat, really nice, high-end, and not that I'm rich or anything, but I know how to manage what I have. And I'll tell you, when I put that top down and I get in that bad boy, the world is mine.
Great, right?
The world is mine. We'll take a break, everybody. We'll come back. We'll take a break. We'll come back with our resident clinical psychologist. She's Dr. Susanna Flores, the author of Face Hooked, coming out in May. So just hold on to your seats. It's going to come out, and I'll tell you, because a lot of y'all out there need help. So Dr. Susanna is on the way with the book called Face Hooked, and coming in May, and I can't wait. We'll be right back, everybody, in just a second with more. It's the Ron Kelly Show, and it's on blogtalkradio.com.
There was a need in talk radio, and one man will fill that need.
What kind of effectiveness is marching out of society today?
And you too can be a witness. The Ron Kelly Show on blogtalkradio.com.
Some statistics are surprising. Some are unbelievable. And some are simply unacceptable. Right now, nearly 30% of U.S. students aren't finishing high school. Nearly 30%. And that's the average. In many places, it's even higher than that. And fixing it is a responsibility that we all share. This is President Obama, and I urge everyone, not just parents, but friends and neighbors and family members, to take responsibility for encouraging the high school students in your communities, to support them, challenge them, push them a little, and do whatever it takes to help them make it through. Because this is one statistic we simply can't afford to ignore.
You can do your part by going to boostup.org and sending an email, a text message, or even a wake-up call to a student at risk of dropping out. Go to boostup.org and provide the boost that's needed to make it to graduation. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
Now, back with more of the fastest growing internet radio show on the World Wide Web.
And it's on. It's go time.
The Ron Kelly Show. And on the web, theronkellyshow.com.
Yes, indeed. It's the Ron Kelly Show. for Friday, March 21st, 2014, allegedly the first day of spring, allegedly. Not around here anyway, maybe somewhere else in some other part of the United States of America, but definitely not here. So I heard it was the first day of spring was, I think it was yesterday, and I'm not convinced. Definitely not convinced. We're talking to clinical psychologist Dr. Susanna Flores, and now that we just heard President Obama, now there's a high. That would be a definite high, being the president of the United States and having people fall all over you every, you know.
You think?
hundreds of thousands of people where you go. You got tons of equipment and Secret Service people protecting. Planes can't even fly over your head. They
right.
have to fly somewhere else. So, I mean,
you're
that,
the most
that,
powerful
that's,
man alive.
Yeah, that's got to be the ultimate. I mean, wow. You know, you got your own plane. It's better than being a billionaire. It's better than being Bill Gates or Warren Buffett. Much better because it's power. And let's
right.
talk about that for
people
a second.
People get addicted to power. Absolutely.
Right. Let's talk about that, Dr. Susanna, because, you know, for example, these presidential campaigns nowadays are costing up to $1 billion. $1 billion. You know, I read somewhere where when President Obama, his campaign was cost almost $1 billion. And I'm like, wow, why would, you know, I'm going to spend $1 billion to get a job that only pays less than $500,000 a year. But, you know, but I do understand it's about the power. It has nothing to do with money. It's the power of being the president or anything else, any other powerful
right.
position.
And once you have power, you don't want to give it up, right? You want the power to continue.
Yeah, that must be the biggest, you know, to have to leave the White House, you know, to have to leave, sitting there at the inauguration and somebody else getting ready to take that job. And, you know, once that person takes the oath, nobody even knows who you are anymore. So I wonder how they would deal with how would you advise, you know, someone in that stature, Dr. Susanna, how would you tell them to deal with that? How would you advise them going from the president to nobody?
Yeah, being drunk on power, basically, right?
Yeah, and going from the most powerful person on earth to, you know, John Q. Public, for example.
You know, it's like anything it's a temporary thing. It's probably like the first thing that comes to my head is like you have to remember that, you know, no matter what happens during these next 4 to 8 years, right, it will stop. And the things that continue in your life are going to be your family, are going to be your relationships, are going to be everything else. Those are the things that you should really be focusing on. This is not who you are. This is a job. It's a major job, and it's probably, you know, I don't know if you want to call it the best job. I don't know about you personally, Ron, but I wouldn't want it.
No,
Let me have the perks, and
don't ask me to do anything. Just
right, yeah.
That's like that cliche.
Right, that's the cliche. It's like heavy lies ahead that wears a crown. It's very lonely at the top. You know, this is not something easy. You know, that's why you see so many presidents age.
Yeah,
you know,
quickly.
So much.
Look at President Obama's. His hair was completely black when he took office, and now he's got more gray than some of those old Congress people that are up there. But the president does have a good family structure, so I guess I would imagine he'd be okay. You know, once it's over.
I think he is okay. You know, even his mother-in-law lives, you know, in the White House to help raise his daughters. I mean, that's good stuff. You know, I mean, that shows like a very strong family dynamic.
And it has
so
to
I
be.
I think he'd be okay.
Yeah, I think there has to be a detoxification period, though, Dr. Susanna, with something like that. You have to detox maybe the first 6 months to a year or whatever to come down off of that. Even though you still have your Secret Service, but
ultimately, I would also say that you know he seems to have a good woman too, you know, and a woman can either make a man or destroy a man, you know.
Absolutely, amen to that.
And vice versa, and vice versa, you know, but, you
right,
know, so
right.
She's probably like, okay, dear, you know, just because you are the most powerful man on earth, you know, doesn't mean that you can, you know, completely have your way with everything or so.
Yeah,
but,
I heard him say a story, I heard him tell, he was telling a story at the night after he won the presidency the first time, 2008, and Michelle said, you still have to take the kids to school tomorrow, you know,
mm-hmm.
which was the... Which was, well, I think that was great. You know, I think that was great, and it was one of those keep your feet on the ground type of moments where, you know, you might be the president, but you still are a father. You still got to take the kids to school. She said to him, which I thought it was cute. You know that she, you know, did she say like, "Oh, you're the president, but you're still a husband and a father." You know.
Right, you know, and it's, you know, he's perhaps like not identifying himself with that. You know, it's like, you know, you can't identify yourself with your job, no matter what job, even his job, because the job ends, right?
Yeah, this is what
you do. This is not who you are, you know, and that also gets, you know, back to our original discussion is like, you know, this cannot be your universe, you know, and once something becomes your universe, you have a problem.
Right, and well, my job definitely is not my universe. But so now, so in other words, Dr. Susanna, so what we're talking about is there's family history.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about addictive behaviors and the people who are more susceptible to addictions, be it whatever it is. It doesn't necessarily have to be a substance. It could be a feeling. It could be a... You know, there's a lot of, lots of ways to get a euphoria other than drugs. So what we're talking about here is family history,
mm-hmm.
coupled with
your
environment. With your environment, right? Whether you're, you know, if you're the kid that gets picked on, or you get, you know, you're a bullied kid or something like that. So it's family history plus environment that separates the people. I mean, and I know it's not an exact science. I know that, you know, it's kind of like a spin
right, it's
the
way
wheel.
More complicated than.
Yeah, it's more complicated than that. But just to put it in layman's terms, it's family history and environment are the two, I guess I would say the two biggest factors.
Components. Right. And, you know, you asked some excellent questions, as you always do, Ron. And I was thinking about this during break. It's like, you know, well, is gambling a disease or is it a behavior? And I think that's probably part of the problem is that, you know, there's inconsistency even with what we therapists or psychologists, you know, consider it to be. You know, it's like, you know, we are not even 100% absolutely sure because it is a complicated issue. You know, like what is the hook? What hooks you, right? And so, you know, that's part of the problem. It's like, is it genetic? Is it, you know, is it a learned? I mean, it's a little bit of both maybe, you know, and that's a problem. Like, you know, can we prevent it completely? I don't know.
Right. I would say no because lots of people, because many people mask their feelings. You might have a kid who's getting bullied, you know, and you know, Dr. Susanna, I'm sure that you've, you know, in your experiences that, you know, you might have a kid who's being bullied who won't say anything, who will come home and, like, everything is fine. And next thing you know, he's threw the other kid off a bridge because
mm-hmm.
it built up and they finally let it go. So many folks, because people don't want to admit that they have a problem. Everybody wants to be Superman or Superwoman, and they don't want to admit, like, listen, I got a problem. Until something catastrophic happens, jails,
right.
Institutions, or something like that. Right, now you want to tell because you're in front of a judge and you're facing 50 years in prison. So now you want to admit it, but it's too late. You know?
Right,
so,
and the U.S. has the highest level of dependence and arrest related to dependence. You know, and if you think about it, the U.S. is very individualistic. Like, you know, I can take care of my own stuff. I don't need... you know, my community, I don't need, you know, my friends, I don't need anything, so I can do it on my own, and not so much sometimes.
Yeah, everybody wants to be a, so it's not an exact science, and I try to make everything an exact science, but it's not an exact science. I guess, you know, you know, there's a lot of variables, and I would imagine you would probably take people on a case-by-case basis that there's no, I mean, there may be some similarities in some of the cases, but there's no, cookie cutter type approach to it. I mean, you
no,
never know.
Not really.
Right.
No. No.
Right.
I wish we did. I mean, I wish it was an exact science so that, you know, we would be able to identify, you know, like, okay, this person's absolutely at risk. We just have kind of a baseline. Like, is it, you know, in your history? Do you have, you know, brothers or sisters that are using? Do you see it every day? You know, and so that's about, honestly, what, you know, the best that we have at this time.
Yeah, kind of like a profile, in other words,
mm-hmm.
like a profile, family
right.
history, environment, maybe economic issues,
right.
maybe a person who fails a lot, you know, who's not successful,
yeah.
who has a history of failure.
Someone who's not happy. Mm-hmm.
Right, because of those things. Oh, okay. All right, everybody, Dr. Susanna Flores is with us this afternoon. Dr. Susanna, I want to thank you so much. I always hold you hostage longer than I say I would.
That's okay.
Because right. I really enjoy talking to you, and I learned so much from these conversations, and my listeners do as well. You know, these days, this day and age, I mean, the brain is, that's the one thing you have to monitor probably more than anything else, your thoughts, your actions. Because you never know, because people, you can be sitting next to somebody, they can be the meekest, mildest person in the world, and the next day they come into work with an AK and just start raking the place. So you don't know who's who. Now, even with that, I don't know if there's any, because the first thing you hear people say, Dr. Susanna, is, boy, I didn't know he was like that, or I didn't know she was like that, or they didn't show any signs. And like I was saying earlier, people are good at masking their how they feel. Until
right.
until they can't mask it anymore, and then they thought,
and,
oh,
and, you
well.
Know, right? One of the sayings we say, you know, in therapy, is like, you know, what you hide controls you. You know, it's like, you know, it becomes your master. So if you're hiding something, you know, that's another sign. Like, you know, you become a master at hiding the addiction, and once you do that, it, you know, you're ashamed, or you know, you don't want to be, you know, scolded or whatever you want to call it, right? But at, you know, at that point, you know that something is your master, something is controlling you.
Yeah, because they say I've heard another phrase too that you're as sick as your secrets, and
which kind of
goes with what you said just now. Everybody, Dr. Susanna Flores, the book is called Face Hooked, and now once the book is released, now where is it going to be available? Well, you don't know yet.
I know it will be available on Amazon and the usual links, and I will definitely get all that information to you as soon as I find out, Ron.
Absolutely, because I'm so ready to read this book. I am so ready because I've been saying this all along, and people have been unfriending me left and right because
oh, the irony.
Yeah, they've been unfriending me left and right because, you know, people don't want to hear the truth. They don't want to hear the truth. Hi, everybody, Dr. Susanna Flores. Dr. Susanna, thank you so much for joining us once again. We'll see you next time. You know, I got a whole list of topics that we're going to be doing. So, and when the book comes out, we'll definitely do a show on the book as well.
All right,
Dr. Sounds Susanna, good. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. You're busy. Thank you so much. I appreciate you. Thank you.
Have a good evening. Thanks.
You
Bye-bye.
Too. Thanks. Bye. All right, everybody, that was Dr. Susanna Flores. She's the author of the book. It's called Face Hooked. Y'all out there know. You're face hooked. You know. Facebook family. They ain't your family. You don't even know half of the people. And they don't know you. And the book, most you're going to get out of them is a birthday wish or some kind words if somebody in your family dies. And that's about it. So, more people will unfriend me after this. All right, everybody, it's the Ron Kelly Show. It's the home of common sense. And like I like to say, everybody, trust no one, only God. Trust no one, because people are snakes. Not all. I'll tell you what, you can give a person the benefit of the doubt, but trust no one. All right, everybody, we'll take a break, and we'll come right back with more. It's the Ron Kelly Show, and it's on blogtalkradio.com.
There was a need in talk radio. And one man will fill that need.
What kind of effectiveness is Marching Animal Society today?
And you too can be a witness. The Ron Kelly Show on blogtalkradio.com.
Snickerdoodle shortbread, touching up fast. How many chips in the cookie jar? One. Dad, you're supposed to jump over the rope.
One more time.
The smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today. Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Now, back with more of the fastest growing internet radio show on the World Wide Web.
And it's on. It's go time.
The Ron Kelly Show. And on the web, theronkellyshow.com.
www.theronkellyshow.com is the official website of The Ron Kelly Show. I demand that you go over there and start posting on The Ron Kelly Show website. There's a lot going on there, including the Ron Kelly Show merchandise page, where you can go and you can purchase merchandise emblazoned with the Ron Kelly Show logo, which I'm going to be changing pretty soon. But in any case, for right now, you can purchase Ron Kelly Show merchandise emblazoned with the Ron Kelly Show logo. And when you wear that item, gym bag or whatever it is, tote bag, you'll be letting the world know that you just don't watch Hollywood Husbands. You are someone who has been educated and enlightened right here on the Ron Kelly Show. So I want to thank everybody for joining me. 4,500 and plus likes on the Ron Kelly Show Facebook page, but the engagements are way down. The engagements are way down. You know, without the engagements, it looks like, you know, the page is off because there's thousands of likes, but not that many engagements, everybody. So mosey on over to the Ron Kelly Show Facebook page and either like it or post your question, your comment. You like me, you don't like me. Well, how is that possible? Somebody not liking me. But anyway, you can post your questions or comments on the Ron Kelly Show Facebook page. The Ron Kelly Show is also on Twitter. You can catch the Ron Kelly Show on Stitcher. It's on iTunes. It's just everywhere. And also, there's a archive on on the website, blogtalkradio.com. So definitely check it out. Come on in and check out the Ron Kelly Show all over the place: Facebook, Twitter, Stitcher, iTunes. You name it. We're everywhere. So you can check the Ron Kelly Show out. It's the home of common sense. It's the Ron Kelly Show. So Russia strikes back. Let's talk about the news for a second. Now, Russia strikes back. You know, before I get into that, I want to talk about something that I heard today. And I listen to the Kook Fringe Republic Party conservative talk radio shows. I listen. I was listening to the top guy. I won't say his name, but the top person, the top personality in the country, actually. Now, I have a lot of respect for him because he's where I would love to be. But as far as the subject matter, it's reprehensible. But he got a gift today. He got a gift because a black woman called in. This man is white. And then, again, you know, we don't do black-white stuff here. She called into the show, a black woman from Mississippi, I believe she was. She called into the program, and she railed against President Obama. And one of the first things she said was that she was embarrassed to be a black person. Embarrassed to be a black person because of President Obama. Now, you can have a problem with his policies. I have a problem with some of them. But am I embarrassed that President Obama is the president? No. But this woman, this black woman, so this is part of the brainwashing of black America, everybody. It's the brainwashing of black America. And I don't know what planet this lady was from, but she railed against President Obama and said, matter of fact, that when she got on the show, the first thing she said was she was embarrassed to be a black person because of President Obama. Now, you know, usually when someone calls into a radio show, you give them like about 30 seconds and they're gone. But he milked this chick. He milked her, you know, because that was a gift. You got a black person coming on and railing against the president. Now, so what she did, in other words, was, you know, she kind of rubber stamped what he's been saying for the last 5.5 years about the president. So when he got that black woman on there, he milked her. She was on that show for about 15 minutes. 15 minutes. Because that was a gift. And she railed against the president and talked about him like a dirty dog. And he kept her on the air as long as he could. Because it's one thing to have a white person call a conservative talk show and talk about the president. That happens all the time. But he got a black woman to say she was embarrassed to be black because of President Obama. I nearly fell out of my chair. But see, this is about the brainwashing of black members. See, because blacks are the easiest people to turn against each other. Yeah, I said it. Black people are the easiest people to turn against each other. Very, very easy. Very easy. Because you're not allowed, and I'm not talking about all black people, but many. And because if you don't think the way I think, you're out. And I felt it myself, when people ostracized me because I didn't think the way they think. You see, because there's no unity in the community, and people can't sit down. Like other ethnic groups, they have disagreements. They sit down and they talk about it. They say, okay, I don't like you, but we have a bigger fish to fry. So we can band together for now and work together to further our cause. Then I can go back to hating you after it's over. But we can work together for now. You see, black folks are incapable of that. They're incapable of that. Willie Lynch, whatever you want to call it, who knows? But many black folks are incapable of working together if they don't like each other. It's plain and simple. Can't do it. Can't do it. I don't like you. You're finished. You don't exist. But other ethnic groups, white folks, for example, other people, Jews, whoever, there are other ethnic groups, Asian, like Latin American, they come together. They may not like each other for that moment, but to see that me not liking you becomes bigger than the cause with black folk. I'm not kicking my black, but I love my black people. I'm not kicking their backs in, but I'm telling the truth. See, the cause, I'm bigger than the cause. Me not liking you is more important than the cause. So I can't work with you. I can't work with you because I don't like you, and I can't get past that. I don't like you. I may not even know why I don't like you, but I don't like you. But this is what happens in the black community, and trust me, this is what happens in the black community. I see it all the time. I'm on Facebook. I say certain things and people stop speaking to me. I mean, is that necessary? Because I say zig, you say zag. That means that we can't come together on a common situation. So that means because, if black children are being shot down or they're shooting each other down, so that means we can't come together and work on that because your ego is bigger than the cause? And this is what happens. Your ego is bigger than the cause. And this is what happens in the black community. And that's why we can't come together for nothing. I have to like you in order for us to come together. I got to like you. If I don't like you, you're out. It's insane. It's childish. And that's embarrassing now. It's embarrassing. I would never say I was embarrassed to be a black person under any circumstances. I wouldn't give a crap who the president was or what somebody did. Never. I'm gonna toss my heritage in the garbage because I'm pissed off at the President Obama. He ain't that important. He's not that important to make me turn around and say I'm embarrassed to be black, but just this woman did. And see, this is what happens in the black community. We turn against each other quicker than you can flip a pancake. And this is why there's so much disarray. And you have 10 or 15 different groups all trying to do the same thing. When they can just all come together, collectively, work together, pool their resources, and get a better response. No, I don't like you. It's ridiculous. And this is what happens in the black community. Not all the time, but very often. It needs to stop. It needs to stop. We need to grow up. Talk a little bit about Russia. Russia, the war of words between the Russians and the United States. And we'll be calling them the Soviets pretty soon. Because they used to call the Russians the Soviets. That's what they used to call them, the Soviets. Never called them Russians. Called them Soviets because of the Soviet Union. And now they call them Russians now because of the Russian Federation and the fact that there is no more Soviet Union. But we'll be calling them Soviets pretty soon. And there's going to be a problem over there, and President Obama is going to be forced, or whoever the next president is going to be forced to do something. President Obama has ruled out military intervention in Ukraine. He may have to rethink that one, especially if the Russians start moving into Ukraine and then start moving into those other states, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, those nations that are down with the United States. Now, if he rolls into there, we got to go help him out. So I don't know if he should have ruled him out. But anyway, the war of words continues. Now, the plane, everybody knows about the Malaysian plane nobody can find. It's been almost 2 weeks, the plane, not a sign of it nowhere, no debris, no nothing. Nothing. They've been searching far and wide. And admittedly, the oceans are pretty big. But somebody should have saw something by now. Now, the Russians are circulating this story, and they're saying that the United States of America diverted the plane to Diego Garcia, which is out there in the Indian Ocean. That's what the Russians are saying now, that the United States took the plane off course because we wanted to put some high-tech gear or something on the plane. This is what the Russians are saying now. So they're trying to, again, the war words, the Russians are striking back, in other words. They're striking back. And they're saying, they're starting the rumor that the United States diverted that plane off course to land it in Diego Garcia, and that's where the plane is now, in Diego Garcia, where the United States has a base in Diego Garcia in the Indian Ocean. Now, and the plane is being covered and hidden where nobody can see it, in a hangar. Now, the only people who are going to believe that are the Russians. No one else is going to believe that. But there may be a few lone wolves, they may start to believe that. So it's just part of the propaganda, and Russians are good at that. They're good at propaganda. The propaganda machine, when the Cold War, the Reagan years, late Jimmy Carter, the whole Reagan, and Bush 41, the propaganda machine was rolling along. So they're good at that, creating diversions and telling stories. Good at that. So this is what they're trying to do right now. They're trying to say that the United States diverted the plane to Diego Garcia so they can put some kind of secret cargo on the plane. Now, if you think about it, who else could have done that? Who else could have made a plane disappear? So there will be people who will who may not believe it 100%, but may think like, you know what? Because there's so many different conspiracy theories out there right now. Millions of them. Everybody comes on TV has a theory. You know, there are too many to repeat. So the United States diverting the plane is just one of them. But it's a good one. I give it to the Soviet Russians. It's a good one. I mean, it's laughable. But if you want to think about it in the context of that someone actually did something, for example, because, you know, cause you have to wonder, were terrorists, even though they took the planes, you know, September 11th, they took the planes and flew them into the buildings. But this plane disappeared. And so if you're one of those conspiracy theorists, you'll look at that Russian story and say, you know what? I don't know, because who else can make a plane disappear besides the United States? Now, the United States is totally capable of making a plane disappear, without a doubt, the technology we have. So there will be some people who start thinking about that and say, you know what, maybe there might be some truth to that. Might be some truth to that. We'll see. But anyway, it's the biggest story out there right now. Everybody's tweeting and trending and all kinds of stuff on this Malaysian plane. And you know, and I think it's a mistake that some of the talking heads, commentators, pundits, whatever you want to call them, I think it's a mistake for them to say that the plane is probably on the bottom of the ocean. Because, you know, because there's people out there who are holding out hope that this plane is still in one piece and not at the bottom of the Indian Ocean. Because if one of my family members was on that plane, for example, if my family member was on that plane, I would rather that they had been kidnapped. Excuse me. I'd rather that they had been kidnapped. Because if they were kidnapped, there's a chance that I'll get them back. So I would much rather the plane be kidnapped. Any one of those scenarios would be fine with me, except saying that the plane crashed. So I think it's a mistake that these radio talk show hosts and some of these other people are saying that the plane crashed, because, you know, family members don't want to hear that. And I think it's insensitive for anyone who has a platform to say that the plane crashed. Because you never know who's listening to these shows. You never know. I get a surprise just about every week. Higher up, Smokey Mugs, be listening to the Ron Kelly Show. People I never thought would listen, who comment, send me messages, comment. Wow, really? So you never know who's listening to your show. So now I'm not going to try to convince them that the plane didn't crash either, but I'm not going to say it did. And, you know, as I said earlier, now, if I was a family member of these, if I had a family member on that plane, I would hope that somebody took it and landed it, and they're holding my people hostage. Because as long as they're hostage and they're alive, you know, I can be reunited with them. Now, if the plane crashes at the bottom of the ocean, which is a couple of miles down, there's no way that they're going to be alive. Because there's some point in the ocean where it's 2 or 3, 4, 5, 6 miles deep. That's a long way. So I think that these people should be a little more careful about saying what happened to this plane. Don't say that it crashed, because there's no evidence that it crashed. But anyway, everybody, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. It's the Ron Kelly Show, heard here every Friday afternoon from 5 p.m. Eastern Time, or Daylight Saving Time, whatever you want to call it, on blogtalkradio.com. So we'll see you back here next Friday afternoon for another edition of the show. So until then, I like to say it's nice to be important, but it's more important to be nice, and that we may not have it all together, but together we can certainly have it all. Thank you so much, everybody, and trust no one.